This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday, the 11th of April, 2025. Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Hampshire Chronicle from the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. May I introduce our readers for this week, Jackie Donnellan.
Hello.
Richard Martin.
Hello.
Jill Russell.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Peter Lydiard. So we begin with our usual regular notices. The first is to say, if you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you have received from us, please contact us on 01962 861229. That is 01962 861229. This number can also be found on the key fob attached to your memory stick. As you listen to the recordings, remember you can use the buttons to move on to the next item before it finishes, or back to any of the tracks if you want to listen to them again. And for those of you with computers or tablets, apart from using the memory stick in the box provided, you can load it onto your own device. And the recordings are also available on our website, www.winchestertalkingnews.com. You can also hear Winchester Talking Newspaper on AWAS Community Radio every Saturday at 5 p.m. And you can listen to us reading the news as a podcast via the Hampshire Chronicle website. So on with our usual headline stories. And the first from Jackie, please, is families slam plans to shut daycare centre.
Winchester residents have taken up arms against Hampshire County Council after it announced its devastating intention to close a daycare centre for the elderly. Families of those who attend Chesil Lodge on Chesil Street, Winchester, say the council's decision to close the centre on March the 31st next year is deeply disappointing. The County Council seeks to save money amid a budget shortfall of at least £97.6 million for 2025-26. Alan and Linda Figgins of Pound Road, Kingsworthy, regularly take Alan's mother, Doreen, 94, who has vascular dementia, to the centre. "The care that she gets there is excellent," said Alan. "The staff there are just excellent. We're very passionate about it. We're very pro Chesil Lodge. Our experiences have all been very positive. We trust them. We trust the staff there. We trust that she's looked after well and she likes the environment." He added, "We're very disappointed, obviously, because it gives Mum that social environment that she wouldn't have otherwise." Sylvia Williams, 93, also a Kingsworthy resident, is another dementia sufferer who visits Chesil Lodge frequently. Her daughter, Linda Webb, 69, spoke in glowing terms of the service the centre provides to the elderly in and around Winchester. She said, "Mum is really upset about the closure of Chesil Lodge. She calls it her club. She would otherwise be sitting at home watching television. They are the most amazing people who work there." An employee at the centre, who asked not to be named, was also upset about the news, saying she did not understand the County Council's decision. "It's been devastating, absolutely devastating," she said. "I've been doing this for 20 years and the people that we provide the service for are people that have dementia, Alzheimer's, people that are frail, or people with depression, people that live alone. So we cover the whole spectrum, really." Anna O'Brien, chair of Dementia Friendly Winchester, felt Chesil Lodge is vital. She said, "It is crucial that good quality daycare services for people living with dementia continue in Winchester, supporting those amongst the most vulnerable in our society to live well, and ensuring those who care for loved ones with dementia are also valued and get that essential much-needed break in order to maintain their own health and well-being too. The council has been hit by soaring costs. The cost of home-to-school transport has risen from £28 million a year to £105 million a year in 10 years. A public consultation on future services runs to May the 7th.
Thank you, Jackie. Richard, please.
Chief Constable quits amid new relationship probe. Hampshire Chief Constable Scott Chilton has quit just weeks after the Daily Echo revealed that he was under investigation for a past relationship with a junior officer. The Echo can reveal his departure on Monday, April the 7th, amid the police watchdog serving him notice that he is under a new investigation into alleged gross misconduct. The newspaper understands the investigation centres around a past undisclosed relationship with a junior officer and another relationship said to have been formed since he became chief 2 years ago. Mr. Chilton, who was around 33 years in policing after joining at 18, was previously under investigation by the police watchdog for failing to disclose a relationship after an allegation was made at another former officer's misconduct hearing. A second referral to the police watchdog was made last week, with the Police and Crime Commissioner being told he is under investigation for potential gross misconduct. An internal email confirmed Mr. Clinton has retired with immediate effect. It means Deputy Chief Constable Sam DeRea is now leading the force. Police and Crime Commissioner Donna Jones said, "The Chief Constable has retired after 33 years of service. The IOPC investigation will continue, notwithstanding his retirement." Mr. Chilton has been referred to the Intendant Office for Police Conduct following DCI Roger Wood's misconduct hearing. The former detective had been quizzed over relationships with junior officers during a hearing and said, "Well, the Chief Constable had an affair." Hampshire Police then made a referral to the IOPC, which is investigating Mr. Chilton. Donna Jones, the Police and Crime Commissioner, previously told the Echo that Mr. Chilton had her full support to continue reducing crime, increasing detection rates, and making communities safer across Hampshire and the Isle of Wight. In a message sent out to officers and staff 2 weeks ago, and seen by this newspaper, Mr. Chilton said, "As many of you will appreciate, these investigations can be lengthy and it may take some time until the outcome is concluded. I know you will understand that I am limited in what I can say until that point. News of this investigation has made a personal impact on myself, my family and my friends, but I have the full support of our Police and Crime Commissioner, as well as colleagues in the force and my family. I remain totally committed to delivering exceptional policing for our communities."
Thank you, Richard. Jill, your headline story, please.
Community Projects 1.9 million funding boost. Communities across the Winchester district benefit from a 1.9 million investment last year. The funding from Winchester City Council's Community Infrastructure Levy, CIL, helped complete 13 projects. The CIL is raised from levies on new developments across the wider Winchester area and is used to fund local initiatives that improve the lives of residents. Among the projects completed last year was the installation of a new solar panel array on Jubilee Hall in Bishop's Waltham. The Parish Council received £40,000 from the City Council for the project, which involved the installation of more than 100 new solar panels at the hall. A spokesperson from Bishop's Waltham Parish Council said, "Bishop's Waltham Parish Council would like to thank Winchester City Council for providing two-thirds of the funding for the installation of solar panels to the roof. We are already seeing a reduction of our energy costs, and this is a significant milestone in the council's work towards decarbonisation of the Jubilee Hall." Another project at Wickham Community Centre received £30,000 towards the installation of new access doors and flooring. A centre spokesperson said, "The new doors look fantastic and have made the centre more accessible while also eliminating the draughts." We applied for CIL funding from Winchester City Council to undertake several refurbishment projects, including new front doors and a complete refurbishment of the long room. The new look has also attracted new hirers, boosting our trading income. Other projects that received support from the District CIL Fund during 2024 included new player equipment at Eversley Park, £12,000, toilet refreshments at Otterbourne Village Hall, £12,850, and works to upgrade allotments in New Alsford, £25,000. Funding was also put towards council-led projects, including £300,000 towards a new 3G pitch for Winchester Football Club, and £1,250,000 spent on the new pavilion at King George V playing fields. Winchester's cabinet member for Place and the Local Plan, Councillor Jackie Porter, said, "CIL funding is a huge benefit to the Winchester District's communities, and I'm enormously proud that we've been able to provide a boost for a variety of initiatives that will help improve our residents' lives and make our local communities more sustainable."
Thank you, Jill. My headline piece is "Hundreds Flock as Store Opens." A new home goods store has opened in Winchester, with hundreds queuing to get a glimpse inside the latest arrival on the Winnell estate. The Range opened Friday, April the 4th, in the former Home Base unit, and will soon be joined by the city's first drive-through Greggs. A grand opening was marked with a ribbon-cutting ceremony led by the Mayor, Councillor Russell Gordon-Smith, marking the debut of the Range's homeware and furnishings with a new gardening hub for enthusiasts. He said, "It was really sad when Home Base closed, and it was just a big empty shed, so this is great. You don't want the feeling that everything is closing down." Store manager Simon Jackson explained that the Home Base team, which he was part of, will continue to work at the Range alongside more than 30 new employees. He said, "We were here as Home Base, and I think the great part about it is that the unit's not standing empty. We've got a great new store. It looks fantastic. We've recruited over 30 odd people from the local area, and we're still recruiting. So I think we've generated some jobs. We've regenerated a retail unit. You can see the people coming in. I think it's really good. What the Range has achieved in a very short space of time has been fantastic." A highlight of the new store is the introduction of the Garden Centre by Homebase, offering a selection of outdoor plants, gardening tools and supplies to satisfy every Green Fingers enthusiast. It also follows the Range's dog-friendly initiative, allowing well-behaved, four-legged shoppers in-store, provided they are kept on a lead. Shoppers are keen to be among the first to experience the store, with early queues forming outside. The initial 50 customers were treated to goodie bags, filled with more than 20 of the retailer's most loved products. CEO of CDS Superstores, trading as The Range, Wilko and Homebase, Alex Simkin, said, "We are thrilled to have welcomed so many people. It was amazing to see the community come together to celebrate, and we are proud to offer such a fantastic range of products and prizes and to thank them for their support. The introduction of the Garden Centre by Homebase in this new store format means we can offer customers everything from stylish homeware to outdoor living solutions, all under one roof." And as usual, we now go on to the death notices, starting with Jackie, please.
Baisley, Doreen Elizabeth Baisley, née Colebrook, 4th of April, age 97.
Henshaw, Brigadier Clinton Henshaw, CBE, peacefully at home on the 3rd of April, aged 88.
Jones, Elizabeth Joy Jones, known as Joe, peacefully at Tegfield House, 8th of March, aged 89.
Leighton Davis, Carol Ann Leighton Davis, peacefully at home, 30th of March, aged 81.
Parker, Hedley Parker, on the 30th of March, age 90.
Portal, Jane Mary Portal, peacefully at home on the 1st of April, age 100.
Slater, Aubrey Norman Slater, known as Sam, the founder of Slater and Gibbons Solicitors in Winchester, 19th of March, in Queensland, Australia, aged 103.
Thank you. Now we go on to Christian comment read by Jackie, please.
Thank you. It doesn't say who wrote today's Christian comment, but the title is "You Could Be Helping Someone Today." Did you watch the recent TV version of Agatha Christie's Towards Zero? Great clothes and settings, though very much changed from the original book, first published in 1944. Writes Moira Redmond. Seeing it sent me back to reread the original book, and I was struck by an early scene featuring a character who is never named and only appears on one page. She's a nurse. One of her patients says, "I've got a right to do what I like with my own life." She said, her fingers playing with the little gold cross that hung around her neck, "No, no, you haven't. You don't understand. God may need you." He argues. She replies, "It may be just by being somewhere, not doing anything, just by being at a certain place at a certain time. You might just walk along a street someday, and just by doing that accomplish something terribly important, perhaps even without knowing what it was." The man in the book does, of course, have a role to play in solving a murder and preventing a miscarriage of justice. We can't all expect to achieve quite that. So the idea that God might have plans for you that you don't know about, do you find that unnerving or comforting? It's certainly a useful mental exercise. And it is worth noting that Agatha Christie herself had a very strong Christian faith all her life. I like the idea that we are involved with each other in ways that we can't always fathom, and that sometimes you have to trust that you have value and importance in the world, that you are helping and achieving just by being there. St. Paul, in 1 Corinthians 12, says we are all part of one body, and that God wants us to have no discord in the body, but that the members may have the same care for one another. If one member suffers, all suffer together. If one member is honoured, all rejoice together. Haven't we all had the humbling experience of someone saying to us, "I've always remembered something you said years ago," a moment of kindness, a word of advice, a casual remark that we may not even remember ourselves? And equally, we have memories of others doing the same for us. It's so encouraging to think there is a network of words and thoughts, that we are helping people, that we are supporting each other with gossamer threads of goodness, which might be slight of themselves, but combined together to help us all. I am working on not getting upset with people. Whether it's my nearest and dearest or a stranger I come across around town, I am trying to think twice before getting annoyed, thinking the worst or making a sharp comment. I don't know what they are going through in their lives, and they don't know why I might be particularly sensitive. Our shared vulnerabilities and an effort at kindness are surely more important than an unlucky move or word.
Thank you, Jackie. Now we go on to letters to the editor. There are 15 letters in the Hampshire Chronicle this week, and they are, as usual, on a variety of subjects. Could you read the first letter, please?
Yes, with pleasure. US boycott, says Stephen Percy of Easton. I feel a patriotic urge to oppose the diabolical Trump tariffs by adopting a personal boycott of US goods. Alas, I could only identify Californian Cabernet Sauvignon as a regular American household purchase, not being a consumer of Coca-Cola, Budweiser, McDonald's, Starbucks, Nike or Levi's, still less of Tesla or Harley-Davidson. And we haven't flown across the Atlantic since COVID. So, fingers on buzzers, what else might I buy boycott?
Thank you, Richard. Deal, please.
Find the money. From John Seager Green at the Hospital of St. Cross in Winchester. Before the current council decided to give Riverside to Southampton University, its predecessor was considering using part of those premises to establish Winchester's Arts and Crafts Centre. The city needs such a facility, and now it has the opportunity to allow it to be created. The problem is money, which the council does not have. If space were allocated for an arts and crafts centre, and we were told what the conversion/renovation cost would be, then there would be an opportunity to raise whatever is required. The council cannot afford the demolition costs, and that the re-establishment costs of the ground to a park, that is clear as a pikestaff. So let us get together, as a community, decide what we can do with the existing buildings for our mutual benefit, cost the exercise, and find the money. It is not brain surgery, and we can do it.
Thank you, Jill. The next letter is written by Angie Wilkinson, and it's headed, Call for Council to Step Up Over Pond. When can lovely weak pond ever be cleaned and filled? It's thick with mud and broken branches, with tins, bottles and rubbish thrown in. For many years it had a nicely looked after by a local volunteer group, and ducks and moorhens would even use the pond to nest. It was a nice place to walk gently past and look at. I know that many cars that rush past on their way to Aldi or Waitrose just cause pollution and don't even notice the pond. However, Weak Pond is historic, and it wouldn't take much for it to be kept alive. Perhaps it's time for the council to step up. It's written by Angie Wilkinson of Eastgate Street, Winchester. Jackie, please.
This letter from Mary Taylor is entitled Jane's Footsteps. We know that many Janeites and Austenites will be visiting Hampshire in this her anniversary year, but just wondered if you could include Southampton. Jane visited Southampton on several occasions and even lived here for 3 years. We, the Southampton Tourist Guides Association, have researched and put together a guided walk so that you can indeed walk in Jane's footsteps. The tours last 90 minutes and cost £10. All our details are on our Facebook page, Southampton Tourist Guides. And that's from Mary Taylor, the Southampton Tourist Guides Publicity Assistant in Southampton.
Thank you, Jackie. Richard, please.
This is from Rob Youngman, who was a booking clerk at Winchester Station from 1960 until 2006. And he calls his letter Tracks of Time. As we celebrate 200 years since the first passenger train ran from Stockton to Darlington in 1825, it's interesting to look at the timetable for our own line that opened throughout in November 1840. Although Winchester Station opened on June 10, 1839, problems with constructing the embankments between Winchester and Basingstoke meant that until November 1840, trains only ran between Winchester and Southampton. It's interesting to look at the timetable for the London and Southampton Railway compared with today, when up to 3 trains an hour travel to London, taking just over an hour to reach the capital. In 1840, there were 8 trains a day from Winchester to Nine Elms. Waterloo Station didn't open until July 13, 1848. Departing at 11:29 a.m., the fastest train of the day arrived in London at 2 p.m. The trains were first class, 17 shillings and sixpence, second class, 10 shillings, and third class was 6 shillings. Third-class passengers could only travel on the one goods train that ran, sitting on the wooden benches in open wagons, open to the elements. Their train leaving at 10:57 arrived in London at 4 p.m.
Oh,
that's from Rob Youngman of Cromwell Road, Stanmore.
That really was third-class travel, wasn't it? Goodness me, yes. Jill, your next letter, please.
This letter is from Lindsay Jerome, headed Name Check. I love reading the Hampshire Chronicle and looking at the photos, as I am an amateur photographer myself. However, I have to tell you that Friday's March the 14th edition of your paper, with a photo of a butterfly taken by Ray Whitfield, is not a red monarch. For a start, there doesn't exist a butterfly by that name, and anyway, it's a red admiral. I'm attaching my photo of a monarch butterfly, which I managed to take Eventually, after much chasing of the few of them blown off course from their migratory route, Mexico to North America and Canada, on the island of Madeira a few weeks ago. They are amazing creatures, flying 3,000 miles on that migration at an average of 100 miles a day. A bit bigger than our beautiful Red Admiral butterflies, they are exceedingly strong and flapped by me almost in slow motion as they make the most of air currents to speed them along. I hope you put a correction in the paper so people know to call our red, black and white butterfly a Red Admiral, not a monarch. Thank you. Lindsay Jerome of Westley, Havant.
Thank you, Jill. The next letter is written by Jeanette Archdeacon, and it's headed Lunchtime Talks. We are delighted to announce that once again we are inviting you to join us at St Lawrence Church, Winchester, for a series of lunchtime talks by excellent speakers. This spring series of Space in the City is entitled The Wessex Way: A Spirituality for All, and our four speakers will reflect on the themes of serving, loving, learning and growing. The talks will take place at St Lawrence Church on Wednesdays, 30th of April, 7th, 14th and 21st of May, from 12:30 until 1 p.m. And as usual, there will be no charge to attend, but donations would be very welcome. We are very much looking forward to seeing you there. That was written by Jeanette Archdeacon, St Lawrence Church, The Square, Winchester. Jackie, please.
This letter's from Charles Jennings, and it's headed Eyebrows Raised. Your article on the planned development of Bushfield Camp, 3rd of April, The Chronicle, included a comment from the head of land for the Church Commissioners of England about the custodianship of the area. Her words raised eyebrows in my household. I have been walking on Bushfield for the past 40 years. Almost daily, I'm reminded of the poor custodianship of the area. Many other local residents who use the land feel the same. Over those 40 years, large areas of this important piece of Hampshire downland have been allowed to regress to blackthorn scrub. The camp area, with its beautiful white orchids, rich flora and bird life, has had no discernible management either. The church commissioners did plant rows of trees on the east side of the camp about 20 years ago. Presumably this was done under some government regeneration scheme. However, these small trees in their protective sleeves were rooted out by the custodians prior to a previous development application. I would encourage local residents to make their voices heard by their local Winchester City Councils on the plan to replace a significant part of this important lung of the city with a plan to build 16-metre-high buildings on the elevated area of Bushfield. To quote King Charles, the current development plan will create a monstrous carbuncle on the skyline of the city. This is land custodianship of the lowest order. And that's from Charles Jennings of Stanmore Lane in Winchester.
Thank you, Jackie. Richard, please.
Michael Fielding writes about a disappearing act. The Anglo-Saxon Chronicle tells us that Hampshire has existed since at least AD 757. It's likely that this shire existed before this date. In 2000... Hampshire County Council organised an exhibition in the Great Hall, telling us that the county was older than England itself, and said that Hampshire is the first shire to exist in historical record. If the new mayoralty comes to pass, which the Chronicle has covered in recent issues, does it mean that our county will disappear after all these years? Michael Fielding, Sheraton Road, Full Flood, Winchester.
Thank you, Richard. Dill, please.
This letter from Tony Gaster is headed Pothole Pain. I think for years government reduced funding to councils. That put a squeeze on spending, which we can all see. One of the vexed issues is potholes. The lack of fixing them, sometimes poor quality work is seen, and sometimes repairs do not last. My council tax only increased by a modest amount. But this week, I have felt the effect of potholes. A £670 bill to fix the broken car suspension. My car only does 4,000 miles per year, mostly on local roads in Hampshire. I've never experienced the need for car suspension to be repaired before, and in years gone by, I did a lot of driving. Have we reached a point where our priorities are wrong? From Tony Gaster of Oliver's Battery.
Thank you, Jill. The next letter is from Mr. S. Perryman. It's headed, Bring Back Lido. Or is it Lido? Who knows? We perchanced to be in Lymington recently and walked past the wonderful Lido, an open-air pool, which the staff were busy getting ready for its imminent reopening, shortly to begin the 2025 season after the winter. It's an amazing facility to have for both Lymington residents as well as the many visitors. Now that River Park is back in the frame of public ownership, there is no reason why Winchester cannot also once again have a Lido oblique open-air swimming pool as it did some years ago. Many other nearby towns, such as Petersfield, Guildford and Newbury, to name just a few, all have such excellent facilities enjoyed by many. For those that have visited the Clark's Village shopping centre in Somerset, cannot have failed to notice the wonderful Lido, opposite which was originally built by the Clark's Shoe family some 80 years ago and is now run very successfully by a group of trustees, including a representative from Clark's. Now that we have the opportunity in Winchester to bring back the Lido to River Park, we must not squander this opportunity. Perhaps the good and great of our lovely Winchester City may, with charitable tax breaks, like to make donations or leave a legacy to bring this lasting facility back to our city. Anyone who has had the privilege of using an outdoor pool knows what a great asset it is. Carpe diem. That is written by Mr. S. Perryman, Barley Down Drive, Badger Farm, Winchester. Jackie, please.
This letter from Mercy Bolas is headed Refund Claims. In reference to your article, County Council paying six-figure salaries to 50 employees despite £200 million debt, the meetings should be mostly on Zoom to save costing the council. This is the only common sense approach in this modern world. These councillors know this. Some councillors are currently behaving like a mafia, using all tricks to secure free money from the taxpayers. These people must pay the money they have wrongly claimed back into state funds. This is not an acceptable professional practice. It appears some are a bunch of professional thieves crafting their way into positions of power. These practices must be stopped from top down by the government. These are my honest points of view. And that's from Mercy Bolas, White Hill, Borden.
Wow. Jackie, yes. Wow. Say it how it is. Yes, Richard, please.
And this is a plea for some prizes, please, from the Friends of Pilgrims Cross School, Andover. We are the committee of Friends of Pilgrims Cross School. We're currently looking for prizes for our summer fair being held on the 17th of May, 2025. Support of generous local businesses and members of the community enable us to fundraise and continue to provide activities and resources to benefit the children and support their education. If you're able to support us in any way, please email friendspilgrimscross@gmail.com and contact a member of our team who will contact you to arrange collection.
Thank you, Richard. Jill, please.
A letter from Simon Lever, headed Visitor Magnet. Increased online shopping and large chain stores, many small individual businesses are certainly suffering, some even closing down. Local residents certainly miss out from such closures, and visitors to Winchester do enjoy a more traditional range of shops, Chronicle March 20th. During the 70s and 80s, many traditional buildings were replaced by typically ugly constructions with built-in obsolescence. Winchester's formidable history is a magnet to visitors from around the world. The square gives an impression of continental outdoor cafes and orangery, residents and visitors enjoying the atmosphere. Historic connections include the 1,000-year-old cathedral, Tudor period, King Alfred the Great, and the awesome life of Queen Emma, once Queen of Denmark, Norway and England. The Theatre Royal and the award-winning Ark Library are other attractions, never to be taken for granted. From Simon Lever, Badger Farm, Winchester.
Thank you, Jill. Jackie, I think you have our last letter.
Yes, a short letter from E.Z. Mayer titled Time for Healing. I found it quite distressing to see what has been happening at the cathedral. The situation should have been resolved before it became a crisis. We all need to move on now, as I said to Bishop Philip. It is a time for healing. And that's from E.Z. Mayer, Berwick Road, Week, Winchester.
Thank you, Jackie. Now, if you have an opinion or a subject you'd like to air in the Hampshire Chronicle, you can contact them on 01962 860836. That is 01962 860836. Or you can email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or you can write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. Right, now we have editorial comment written, read by Richard, please.
Excuse me, beg your pardon. The closure of Chesil Lodge Day Centre is the topic. Little by little, the quality of life of many people in Hampshire is being eroded. The Day Centre at Chesil Lodge in Winchester has been earmarked for closure next year by the County Council to save money. The council is in serious financial trouble and is battling to save £100 million in the 25-26 financial year alone. So the centre is set to close in March 2026. It's used by dozens of people with conditions such as dementia and Parkinson's. It gives their families some respite and provides the users with a change of scene that is often stimulating and beneficial from a health point of view. Should it shut, those mainly elderly people will be the losers. It would be easy to criticise the County Council. Like any large organisation, it has fat that could be trimmed, but the financial pressure it's under is beyond such trimming. It's been caught between the rising costs, such as those for special educational needs and disabilities, and home to school transport, which has rocketed from £28 million a year a decade ago to £105 million now. On the other side, there is reduced financial support. Central government, after the credit crunch of 2008-2009, cut its financial support for local authorities. Austerity in the UK went much deeper than in most of Europe, and we're now seeing the results. The proposed closure of Chesil Lodge, lack of investment in schools, and countless potholes. The erosion of many people's quality of life has not happened quickly. It's been gradual over those 15 years. Just because it's been incremental, it is no less real and no less harmful.
Thank you, Richard. Now, the opinion piece this week is written by Kimberly Barber, and it's headed The King, Prime Minister and Chronicle. It's been a busy week for local journalists, and if you follow any of us on LinkedIn, you're probably fed up with seeing pictures and posts all about the many events celebrating the industry. However, for those of you without access to the platform, here's a rundown of some of the great events that have happened that have seen local hacks blowing their own and their peers' trumpets. Firstly, the King invited 400 journalists to Buckingham Palace reception to celebrate the local media's work. With the Queen by his side, the King mingled with the media professionals, including NewsQuest's editorial director, Toby Granville, and several NewsQuest editors. He acknowledged the essential role of regional media in society, especially in these uncertain times. In a statement, the King said, "I have long believed that regional media, in all its forms, has a unique and vital role to play in society, perhaps even more so in these uncertain times. Your reporting and the work of all those who support you helps amplify and reaffirm the rights and responsibilities we all share. It shines a light in dark corners, exposing injustice and wrongdoing. Above all, it helps strengthen our communities in times of joy and at moments of sorrow. The King also recognised the commercial pressures and technological changes impacting the industry. He praised the adaptability and innovation of many in the media landscape and said, "It is in everyone's interest that you should succeed, for without a thriving and financially robust regional media, we would all be the poorer." Sadly, I was away for the King's great disappointment. Oh, sorry, I've started again. Sadly, I was away for the King, bracket, a great disappointment to my dad, but I was around on March the 31st, when 80 representatives from local media organisations were invited to attend a special reception at No. 10 Downing Street, hosted by the Prime Minister Keir Starmer. Mr. Starmer addressed the guests, highlighting the unique role of the regional media. He said, "Nobody knows your local areas and issues in the way that you do, and I don't think there's any other sort of media outlets, interrogators, interviewers who can put the questions in the way that you do, because you understand what's happening in your patch the way nobody else does." He also commended the local reporters for their commitment to shining a light on important issues. This week concluded with the newspaper awards and another trip to London, recognising some of the industry's best practices. The Salisbury Journal, the County Press and the Impartial Reporter were shortlisted for Weekly Newspaper of the Year, with the Impartial Reporter winning the category. Additionally, Nancy Fallows from NewsQuest, who helped redesign the Hampshire Chronicle's front page last year, was shortlisted for Employee of the Year. Then on April the 4th, the NCTJ Awards took place in Manchester. Arguably my favourite awards, they recognised some of the talent coming through the industry, and it was an honour to help judge them again. It was great to see some familiar faces, especially some of the students who have been on work experience placements under my titles. One story in particular stood out. Ezekiel Bertrand, a reporter with NewsQuest South London, was named Level 5 Apprentice of the Year. Starting his apprenticeship at just 16, Ezekiel has consistently excelled, passing all his shorthand exams at up to 120 words per minute on his first attempt. He's been described as a superstar and a role model for aspiring journalists by his editor and tutors. Top work, Ezekiel. In amongst all the visits and celebrations, we still managed to meet deadlines and produce our usual excellent newspapers and populate our brilliant websites. For all the naysayers who lurk in Facebook comments and crow about local news being dead, I say it's not dead, it's just different. And if you want to live in a better community, make sure you buy a copy of your local newspaper. We really are doing great things. Well, talking of news, we now go on to an alternative look at the news from Belgarum, starting with Jackie, please.
Colleges world-class approval. Sparshalt College Group's Animal and Aquatic Research Centres have been recognised for their excellence. The Animal Health and Welfare Research Centre and the Aquatic Research Centre at the college have been given accredited status by the British and Irish Association of Zoos and Aquariums, BEAZA. The accolade is reaching the world-class standards set by the body. Sparshalt College Group is among the first to be accredited under the new BEAZA scheme. The comprehensive accreditation process involves stringent screenings by industry experts, questionnaires, and extensive documented evidence. Julie Milburn, Principal and CEO of Sparshalt College Group, said, We are immensely proud of this achievement, which reflects our ongoing commitment to providing our learners with an exceptional and forward-thinking educational experience that prepares them for their careers. Shani Ratnayake, the Research Centre Manager, added, "We are extremely proud to be a BIAZA-accredited zoo and will always aim to achieve the highest standards of animal welfare. It really is important to us to teach best practice to our learners so that they can take this knowledge into their future careers."
Thank you, Jackie. Jill, the second piece from Belgarum, please.
Students' sustainable display. University of Winchester students have created a sustainable window display for a charity shop. Third-year fashion marketing students visited the Naomi House and Jack's Place shop in St George's Street, which raises money for local hospices for children and young adults, to create the display as part of Winchester Fashion Week. They hope to spark conversations around ethical consumer choices. Andrew Morby, Retail Commercial Operations Manager at Naomi House and Jack's Place, said, "Our charity shops provide a sustainable and ethical way of recirculating unused items. By reselling products at a reasonable price, we keep them out of landfills and make a positive difference for our hospices."
Thank you, Jill. Right, now a quick look at what's coming up in the local area that you might find of interest. Sunday the 13th of April, three things are coming up at the Theatre Royal. Two on Sunday the 13th, The Amazing Bubble Man, that's on at 2 p.m. Louise Pearl has been thrilling audiences around the world for over 30 years with the art, magic, science and fun of bubbles. That evening at 7:30, there is a comedy called No Kissing in the Bingo Hall. Tuesday the 15th at the Theatre Royal, The Elmer Adventure, that's at 7:30. Elmer is not an elephant colour. Elmer is patchwork. Going on, Winchester Film Society, they are showing Wilding at 7 p.m. at the Science Centre and Planetarium. Sunday the 19th, 40 Towers Revisited. That is a comedy dining at the Holiday Inn in Eastleigh. Not sure I'd want to go to that particular dining being served by Manuel, but there we go. Saturday the 26th of April, there is a plant sale at Hyde, that is Monk's Walk, Winchester. Tuesday the 29th, another Winchester Film Society, this time they are showing The Teacher's Lounge. Also on Tuesday the 29th, Comedy of Terrors, a play once again at the Theatre Royal. Monday the 5th of May, Big Way Round Trail Run Festival, Winchester. So you can discover beautiful trails around Winchester and challenge yourself to one of our four distances. Yes, if you like to run marathons, that is clearly for you. And finally, on the 8th of May, there will be the Talking Newspaper AGM, which will be at 2 o'clock at Littleton Millennium Memorial Hall. We have a guest speaker, Frieda Bates, who will give an illustrated talk about the Houses of Parliament. So that is on the 8th of May at 2 p.m. Well, let's have a look at the lighting up times for the coming week. The sun, if there is any, will rise at about 6:30 a.m. and set again at around 7:45 p.m. And then we go on to the items of general news. Jackie, can we have the first article, please?
Yeah, the headline is "Developers Grilled Over Silver Hill Regeneration." Winchester residents grilled developers at a public event presenting plans for the City Centre Regeneration Scheme, also known as Silver Hill. After a presentation by representatives of Jigsaw Consortium, which the City Council has chosen as its partner, some members of the 100-strong audience took issue with the proposals. One member of the public, who said he has experience in planning and development, questioned the £100 million project's timescale. He said, "I was shocked to see your time frame is going up to 2034. I've built stuff like this before and it didn't take me 5 years to build it, so why is it taking you so long?" Matt Woolgar replied on behalf of Jigsaw, "I agree. No challenge there. These are milestone dates that are the maximum amount of time we could take to deliver the project. There are some longer term matters to deal with on the second phase of the project. The opening up of the historic waterways, that takes time." Another resident took issue with the presentation, which he said was full of buzzwords, without actually explaining the details of the scheme. He said, "Most people here wanted to know something about the development plans and what you want to achieve. What are you proposing? From what you've just said, it's just buzzwords at the moment and it's not delivery. Most residents in Winchester have been burnt so many times with poor projects like the Brooks Centre." Another Jigsaw representative, John Norden, replied, "In 3 months' time, we'll have a project to show you. The DDP, Design and Development Plan, is not a drawn plan of what the scheme is. We are not at that point. We have done some thinking. I apologise if you came here thinking we were going to show you what it was going to be like, but in 3 months' time, we will be able to show you." The leader of Winchester City Council, Martin Todd, also spoke at the event, reiterating his full support of the project. "While we can all get frustrated as to how long it takes to make this project happen, there's no price for going faster if the price is failure," he said. The event took place soon after the City Council's Cabinet approved the developmental delivery plan for the project, along with a £4.5 million capital grant of Community Infrastructure Levy.
Thank you, Jackie. Richard, please.
Primary schools set to be smartphone free. The primary schools announced plans to become completely smartphone free by September. Week Primary School in Winchester is transitioning to the new rule, which will prohibit pupils from bringing smartphones onto the school site unless medically required. Before the change was announced, two-year groups were bringing 35 smartphones to school every day. Jonathan Kirkham, head teacher of Week Primary, said, "I've been in this job for 25 years and recently I've noticed a massive increase in the risks regarding our pupils' use of technology. What I want is for our children to come to school safe. The school has the necessary infrastructure to deal with every scenario a pupil might need a smartphone for. We've got a society of children living in a very different world than us," Mr. Kirkham said. "Does it really matter how many wives King Henry VIII had when children don't understand the risks of technology?" The move comes after national campaigning by parents' pressure groups such as Smartphone Free Childhood, which would see school pupils signing a pact to refrain from using a smartphone until the age of 14. Recent increases in cybercrime against children on platforms such as Instagram, Snapchat, etc., have sparked significant concern among parents nationwide. Suicide, anxiety, and depression rates in young people are currently at the highest since 2010, which is the first generation of children to start using smartphones. Week Primary is just one school making the move to smartphone free. Claire Ferniehoff, a founding partner of Smartphone Free Childhood, has helped the movement build a community of more than 200,000 parents to campaign against smartphones in schools. She said, "We believe that childhood has been handed over to the tech companies. The movement believes that smartphone use has become too common in children and teenagers, with most children in the UK receiving a smartphone before they turn 10. Miss Ferniehoff also believes children should be educated on their use of technology and taught how to navigate social media. She said children need to understand how big tech's addictive algorithms work."
Thank you, Richard. Jill, please.
Quirky artworks on display at exhibition. A giant velo pasty and a portrait made of postage stamps are among the quirky artworks in a new exhibition. The exhibition, called Work and Play, is being hosted at the Winchester Gallery at Winchester School of Art. It is the result of the first open call for art applications by the University of Southampton-owned gallery. The exhibition features 26 works by University of Southampton students and staff and members of the local community, chosen from 75 applications. Students on the Contemporary Curating and Fine Art courses at Winchester School of Art collaborated on the exhibition. They worked with Trinity Art Group in Winchester to design aprons, the uniform of work and play, which visitors can wear while they view the exhibition. A huge pasty made of gold vella stuffed with recycled magazine pages, created by artist Mel Fitch Mitchell from Totten, features in the exhibition. A portrait of a busker made from used postage stamps by amateur artist Caroline Haynes from Chandler's Ford is on the show. Caroline, 62, took up art when she retired 3 years ago. In lockdown, I bought 2 bags of used postage stamps from a charity shop. I found it very therapeutic sorting them, saying that I will do something with them one day. A piece called Foot and Ball by Dave Gibbons, specialist photography technician at Winchester School of Art, includes video footage of a ball being dribbled, taken from the perspective of the footballer's feet and a pair of studded shoes. Dave said, "I played football at a high level for many years and enjoy the sport as a fan. Foot and Ball is the result of technical explorations which involved using stills photography and moving image whilst playing or watching football." Julia Fogel, lecturer and fellow in printmaking at WSA, curated the exhibition. She said, "It is a fantastic opportunity for our students to be showing their work alongside that of renowned professional artists. Work and Play is on at the gallery at Winchester School of Art, Park Avenue, until Saturday, May the 24th, and admission is free. The gallery is open Tuesday to Friday from 12 p.m. to 6 p.m. and Saturday from 12 p.m. to 4 p.m. It will be closed for Easter from April the 17th to the 22nd.
Thank you, Jill. My piece is headed Hampshire County Council Leaders' £15,000 Allowances Claim. The former leader of Hampshire County Council claimed more than £15,000 in allowances over a six-month period, despite not attending meetings, it has been revealed. Rob Humby, who led the council from May 2022 to May 2024, when he formally resigned, stepped down to care for elderly relatives. He missed 2 cabinet meetings in April and May before being replaced as council leader by Councillor Nick Adams-King. New information revealed by Private Eye on April the 4th as part of a Freedom of Information request shows that Mr. Humby, who represented Bishops Waltham, collected £7,023 in basic allowances and £7,745 in special responsibility allowances between March the 15th and August the 31st. He additionally claimed travel expenses amounting to £668 in April and May. Hampshire County Council pays its councillors a basic allowance of £1,170 a month, with leaders receiving an additional SRA of £2,285 a month. In July, Hampshire County Council's Conduct Advisory Panel granted Mr. Humby an extended leave of absence. A report to the panel said Councillor Humby has recently had increased caring responsibilities for his elderly aunt, who resides with him and his wife. Coupled with that, he also now has significant additional caring responsibilities for his elderly father and mother. He lives closest to them, with his siblings being some distance away. The caring needs of all three relatives require Councillor Humby to be available for urgent response to support them on a daily basis, which significantly affects his ability to attend meetings without risk of impact on his vulnerable relatives. He is in the process of putting in place appropriate care arrangements through private provision, although it takes time to secure the appropriate care and for that to bed in. This has resulted in him being unable to attend a meeting of the County Council, his committees, outside bodies or joint committees to which he was appointed since he attended the leader and executive member for Hampshire 2050 and Corporate Services Decision Day on March the 14th, 2024. His 6-month non-attendance limit was set out in the Act will therefore expire on September the 14th, 2024. It is requested that the Conduct Advisory Panel grant Councillor Humby a leave of absence until December the 14th, 2024. Mr Humby has been contacted for comment. Jackie, please.
£3.4 million grant to reduce our carbon footprint. Winchester City Council has been awarded £3.4 million to improve the energy efficiency of its council homes. The grant, totalling £3,458,753, was awarded by the Department for Energy Security and Net Zero. It's the highest individual allocation to a Hampshire local authority. The council plans to use the funds to improve the energy ratings of 672 homes over the next 3 years. This will be achieved through the use of energy-saving technology such as air source heat pumps, solar panels and solar batteries, as well as building fabric improvements like cavity wall and loft insulation. The funding will support the council's Energy Saving Homes programme, which has already delivered upgrades to 600 properties. Councillor Chris Westwood, Cabinet Member for Housing, said, "Our Energy Saving Homes programme is already having a real significant impact, reducing costs for our tenants and bringing down the carbon footprint of our homes. I'm really pleased we've been able to successfully bid for further funding that will allow us to carry out even more energy efficiency improvements, meaning more of our tenants will benefit from cheaper bills and warmer homes as part of our efforts to become greener faster. The improvements are expected to save tenants money on their energy bills and reduce the home's carbon footprints."
Thank you, Jackie. Richard, please.
Further to the item about expenses to councillors, debt-ridden council still paying 50 six-figure salaries. Hampshire County Council is paying six-figure salaries to 50 of its staff in spite of a debt which recently tallied £197 million. The local authority has more employees earning more than £100,000 than any other in the South East, with only five other councils nationally outstripping it in this statistic. Several officers earn upwards of £200,000, with Chief Executive Carolyn Williamson earning a salary of over £290,000. Other highly paid council workers include Graham Allen, Director of Adult Health, £218,000, and Rob Carr, Director of Corporate Operations and Deputy Chief Executive, at £218,000. Among those pushing £200,000, were Stuart Ashley, Director of Children's Services, Gary Westbrook, Director of Hampshire 2050, and Jack Broughton, Director of People and Organisation, and Patrick Block, Director of Universal Services. A spokesperson for Hampshire County Council said, "Most local authorities hold debt. For Hampshire County Council, as one of the largest county councils in the country, serving 1.4 million residents, this must be seen in the context of a 2.4 billion gross budget and the fact that we have around £500 million in investments. The Financial Resilience Index, produced by the Chartered Institute of Public Finance and Accountancy, shows Hampshire at low risk in terms of interest paid as a proportion of the total budget and the gross level of its external debt.
Thank you, Richard. Jill, please.
Shop future. Cheriton's village shop could be closer to being saved. A new update, published on the Cheriton Parish Council Facebook page on Monday, says that the shop could be taken on by businessman Keithan Adash after its closure had been announced in March. Mr. Adash has run the Premier Shop in Mitford Road, Alsford, for 15 years. The post by Council Clerk Claire Chollerton said, "I wanted to share some important developments regarding our village shop. Earlier today, the 3rd of April, I was contacted by Gillian Grey Knight, who informed me that she had been approached by Mr. Keithan Adash with an interest in running the shop commercially. Mr. Adash is keen to collaborate with the Cheriton Village community to ensure the shop meets your needs. A village meeting will be held on the 15th of April at 7 p.m. in the village hall, where people can meet Mr. Adash and ask questions. He is also very keen to gauge from this meeting the support from within the village for a shop. Mr. Adash was unavailable for further comment."
Thank you, Jill. My piece is headed "Easter Railway Disruption Spells Trouble for Travellers." Train journeys over Easter are likely to be affected by rail maintenance in a move that is better for the taxpayer. Network Rail will be undergoing track maintenance and upgrading tracks between Southampton Central and Fareham, affecting Great Western Railway services. Train services will be impacted from Saturday, April the 12th to Sunday, April the 20th. Great Western Railway trains for Portsmouth Harbour will use an alternative route between Romsey and Fareham on all dates, replacing the stop at Southampton Central with one at Eastleigh. On all dates, replacement bus services will run between Southampton Central and Fareham instead of trains. Southwestern Rail trains will still run between Eastleigh and Southampton Central from Monday the 14th to Saturday the 19th of April, and between Romsey and Southampton Central on Saturday the 12th and Monday the 14th to Saturday, April the 19th. Replacement buses will also run between Southampton Central and Eastleigh on the weekend of April the 12th and 13th and Sunday, April the 20th. Replacement buses are also planned between Southampton Central and Romsey on Sunday the 13th of April and the weekend of April the 19th and 20th. Further engineering works is planned in the Southampton area on Sunday, April the 27th. Mark Goodall, Wessex Route Director for Network Rail, said, "We sincerely apologise to passengers for any inconvenience." Jackie, please.
Seeking new prison staff. A senior leader at His Majesty's Prison, Winchester, is encouraging people to apply for a new programme to find the next generation of prison leaders. His Majesty's Prison and Probation Service has launched the Future Prison Leaders Programme, a 3-year initiative to recruit 35 talented individuals from diverse backgrounds. The programme offers a clear career pathway leading to a senior leadership position in prisons. Kim Martin, 35, an improvement lead at HMP Winchester, started her career as a prison caterer at 19. She said, "Having worked my way up from prison catering through various non-operational roles, including business hub manager and assurance and performance lead, I found the scheme challenging but incredibly rewarding. Successful candidates will serve as prison officers, learning the full range of operational duties, before progressing to custodial manager in year 2, when they will manage a team of prison officers. In year 3, they will take on a head of function management role, responsible for areas such as security, operations, drug strategy, prisoner accommodation, and business assurance. Upon completion, participants will be prepared to undertake assessments to become a deputy governor, responsible for hundreds of staff and prisoners. To apply, candidates need people management experience or a degree, and there's more information on the Future Prison Leaders Programme website."
Thank you, Jackie. Richard, please.
Safety fears over music festival expansion plan. Organisers of Hampshire's Boomtown Music Festival are forging ahead with plans to expand the festival, but not everyone is happy that there will be 11,000 extra revellers. Objectors have hit out at the plans for the five-day festival based on the Matterley Estate in South Downs National Park near Winchester, but there are more people in support. Festival goers and residents have praised the event for helping the local economy and it being an absolutely wonderful festival. However, issues raised by objectors included concerns over public safety, the death of a young male festival goer last year, noise, light pollution, traffic, noise from helicopters, public urination, the impact of drugs, and habitat impact. The Boomtown website said it wanted to increase its attendees from 66,000 in 2024 to 77,000 in 2025 without an adverse effect on the countryside, and submitted a planning application to the South Downs National Park Authority. We're planning for Boomtown to grow back out of downtown and return to the surrounding hills, providing more space for you all to decompress and enjoy all our festival has to offer, the website said. Applicants Boomtown Festival UK Limited and Matterley Farming applied to hold one music festival a year between May the 1st and October the 15th for 5 years. Planning permission to hold the festival on the 433-acre site at Matterley Bowl, Matterley Farm, Ovington, Alsford, expired last year and needs renewing. The application is asking for built wooden structures to be retained within the woodland area and for additional access points onto the A31, the A272 and Rodfield Lane to cope with the expanding size of the event. The planning statement said that building and dismantling the festival would not take more than 9 weeks. The National Park Authority said because of the potential significant impact of the festival on the park, it would handle the planning application and not Winchester City Council.
Thank you, Richard. Jill, please.
EasyJet has launched its 8th route into Southampton Airport. A new flight route from Southampton Airport to Paris has been launched. EasyJet has officially launched its 8th route from Southampton Airport with a new twice-weekly service to Paris Orly. The first flight was on Monday. This addition marks a key connection to the French capital, offering travellers more choice for summer 2025 and adding yet another popular destination to its growing network. The year-round new service will operate twice per week on Mondays and Fridays, with EasyJet planning up to 21 weekly departures from Southampton during peak summer 2025. This represents a 31% increase compared to summer 2024, highlighting the airline's ongoing commitment to expanding services from Southampton and strengthening connectivity between the Central South region and Europe. Paris Orly offers seamless access to the French capital with just 25 minutes by public transport from the airport to central Paris. Additionally, frequent daily shuttle buses connect Paris Orly directly to Euro Disney, creating even more opportunities for family-friendly travel to this iconic destination.
Thank you, Jill. My piece is headed Helch Market Plans to Bring Food Hall to City. A young entrepreneur has spoken about his plans to transform Winchester's only nightclub into a food hall. David Jemmer Brennamore will convert Vodka Nightclub and Bar in Upper Brook Street into Helch Food Market after his licensing application was approved by Winchester City Council on Tuesday, March the 25th. Mr. Brennamore, who runs another Helch Food Hall in Bournemouth, said he is very glad to have had his application approved, with work on the site to begin as soon as possible. He said, "It was a big thing up in the air. It was the main thing I was waiting on, to be able to start work here. I'm just happy to be able to start work on it. These premises, because of the layout of it with the floors, makes it ideal. In Bournemouth, I have two floors, one on a bar with events and another the food hall. But it's perfect here, having two different spaces with more kitchen seating. Mr. Benmore said that he felt the main opposition to Helps Market in Winchester was due to people not understanding it. It's been a nightclub for 40 years, I think. From what I can tell, the building was built to be a bar, a nightclub. So, for neighbours, it being a food hall was the best thing it could be. I think in terms of what this building could become, from speaking to the letting agent, he said that the options were a sports bar or another nightclub. Those were the people looking at the space and the offers before. So I don't know what this could become apart from this, a nightclub, a sports bar, because of the lack of windows. From my perspective, it seemed like the most positive outcome for this building. When asked about how he aims to appease the neighbours who had complained about Helps Market moving in, Mr. Benamore said, "The licensing application was very extensive in terms of prevention and reduction of nuisance. And from what we agreed in the licensing subcommittee, that adds on to it. But in terms of what was existing, it is a reduction of what it was. I want to do everything I can to reduce the nuisance, though. I'll be buying the building, and it has to have longevity, so any nuisance needs to be completely sorted out. Obviously, I wasn't happy that there were objections. I would have had to agree them to it and be happy with it. But apart from the neighbours suggesting that we move it somewhere else, there wasn't much solution. I suppose there are a lot of other things I have ideas about, but we need planning permission to do anything. We could put some plants up to reduce the sound more, but it's ideally I would keep working with the council and the neighbours. Mr. Benmore said he hopes to have Helps Market Winchester open between late August and early September, estimating the work to get it ready will cost £300,000. Jackie, please.
Very clever teen, 17, took own life. A very clever boy who loved computers and was a world-ranked gamer took his own life, an inquest has concluded. Alexander Daniel Hamilton Henshaw, 17, died at his home in Highcroft Road, Winchester, on September the 10th last year. In a statement read by area coroner Rosamond Rhodes Kemp, Alexander's mother Lisa Henshaw said that he was a very clever person, whilst also being painfully shy, and that he had autism, which impacted him socially. Mrs. Henshaw said that her son was scared of his own shadow, with his autism and anxiety making it so he could not queue up for lunch at Basingstoke College of Technology, where he was studying. Mrs. Henshaw said that Alexander had raised concerns to her on September the 9th about being asked to give a presentation to one of his classes, something she believed he would not have to do due to having special permission, saying, "I said he had other arrangements." Mrs. Henshaw said that she and Alexander did not speak about the presentation again, and that when she went to bed, he had locked and bolted the door to his room, something he usually did. When she awoke at approximately 6:30 a.m. on September the 10th, his door was still locked. Worried that he would miss his train to school, she contacted the fire service, who broke down the door. She said they had to use a sledgehammer to open the door. In a statement from Alex's father, Adam, he said, "Alex never self-harmed or mentioned suicide to me. I miss my son very much. He was also my friend." A statement from Basingstoke College said that Alex was a good student, with a game being exhibited that he had designed. Mrs. Rhodes Kemp said, "It is quite obvious that Alex was a very good student in his studies and was looking to have a bright future in his chosen field. He was regularly in the top 10 gamers in the world. For whatever reason, and we will never know why, he took his life on September the 10th. He had numerous challenges. He had a number of conditions of both a physical and neurological nature. This would have affected his health. It is a credit to him that he managed in a society that is not always accommodating to individuals like him. I am very, very sorry for whatever it was that caused him to take this action that day.
Thank you, Jackie. Richard, please.
New High Sheriff of Hampshire announced. Sue Elton has become the High Sheriff of Hampshire. She was declared in the role at a ceremony on March 26 at the Great Hall, Winchester, attended by Mr. Justice Lyndon, circuit judges, magistrates, the Lord Lieutenant, and the outgoing High Sheriff John Whittaker. Miss Elton said, "I'm honoured to take on this ancient office of High Sheriff, particularly for the beautiful county of Hampshire, where I've lived for over 30 years and brought up my family. The High Sheriff is the King's representative in the county for all judiciary and law and order matters. The role, a royal appointment for 1 year, dates back to Saxon times. Today it involves supporting the royal family, the judiciary, the police, emergency services, local authorities, and recognised church and faith groups." Miss Elton from Longwood near Winchester said, "I'm honoured to represent the King, and want to shine a light on all that is being done tirelessly by these amazing volunteers."
Right, thank you, Richard. Jill, please.
It all adds up nicely for four pupils in the maths competition. Four pupils from a primary school in Oslebury have recently achieved a silver award in a maths competition. The competition, held at the Greg School in Southampton, saw Oslebury's team excel among 31 other schools. The team showcased exceptional problem-solving skills and teamwork, earning them a second-place finish. A school spokesman said, "This achievement underscores the breadth of opportunities available to the students at Oslebury, both within and beyond the classroom. At Oslebury Primary School, we pride ourselves on offering a nurturing environment that encourages academic excellence and personal growth. Oslebury Primary School, which describes itself as a small, inclusive institution, currently has limited spaces available in every year group. Prospective parents and students are invited to experience the school's community and can arrange a tour or seek further information via the school office."
Thank you, Jill. My piece is headed Easter Family Fun at Winchester Cathedral. Winchester Cathedral is preparing to host an array of Easter-themed family activities. The programme, which started on Wednesday, March the 26th, included guided tours, workshops and trails aiming to involve and interest young visitors. Running from April the 18th to April the 17th, April the 8th, to April the 17th, the Easter family tours will let children and their families enjoy a lively guided walk around the cathedral, meeting historical characters such as Diver Bill and St Swithin. The tours, lasting 45 minutes to 1 hour, are included with an annual pass but must be pre-booked due to limited availability. That's 20 visitors per tour. They are suggested for children aged 6 to 11, each accompanied by an adult. From April the 8th to April the 11th, families can also participate in craft workshops run by the Winchester Cathedral Learning Team, where children can create butterfly-themed decorations. The workshops, which are recommended for ages 3 to 11, also include an interactive story time, followed by a butterfly spotting activity around the cathedral. Meanwhile, the Easter Family Trails offer a self-guided interactive way for families to explore the cathedral's hidden gems until Wednesday, April the 23rd. The cathedral also offers family-friendly services, including the daily evensong at 5:30 p.m. Further details and booking, families can visit the cathedral's website or contact the box office on 01962 857 275. Jackie, please.
Student has a Bite at Business Award. A University of Winchester student has reached the final of a national business competition. Business management student Taylor Nurston will pitch her product, Baby Biltong Bites, to judges at the Enacta Spark competition. The competition, which supports students and young people to engage in social action and enterprise, ran a six-week course to help competitors develop their business ideas. The six best were selected for the final, with the winner set to receive £1,000 to help develop their project. Taylor's idea was to downsize biltong, air-dried meat strips originating from South Africa, to suit children from 6 months old. Baby biltong bites come with a string attached as a precaution against choking. The 19-year-old has South African roots, and the beef snacks are made to a family recipe at the Nurston family home in Storrington, West Sussex. As the meat is air-dried, it contains no chemicals or preservatives. Taylor, who is in her second year at Winchester, said, "I gnawed on biltong from an early age, and I still occasionally eat biltong to this day." She hopes to use the business skills she is learning at Winchester to become an entrepreneur. Steve Northam, Senior Lecturer in Entrepreneurship and Innovation Entrepreneur in Residence at Winchester Business School, said, "Taylor has always shown a creative and entrepreneurial mindset, so it's great to see her taking concepts developed in the classroom into real-world business ideas." The Enacta Spark final took place at London's Excel in a Dragon's Den style format. It took place on April the 7th, so no doubt we'll hear the results at another time.
Thank you. Jackie Richard, please.
MPs lobbied for a just peace. Winchester Christian Aid representatives lobbied an MP in Parliament. Peter and Maggie Lippiatt from Hairstock urged Danny Chambers MP to ensure that the UK plays its part in securing a just peace in Israel and Palestine. The pair were in Parliament on Monday, March the 23rd, as part of a Christian Aid event. The British Church's aid agency brought partners from Gaza, the occupied West Bank, East Jerusalem and southern Lebanon to speak with MPs about the desperate situations in which they and theirs are living and dying.
Thank you, Richard. Jill, please.
This article is headed "Dog Grooming Salon to Recycle Dog Hair." A dog grooming salon has partnered with a recycling company to recycle dog hair in 10 different ways. Hairy Poppins in Stockbridge Road, Winchester, has teamed up with Green Salon Collective to recycle dog hair from grooms in a number of ways, including using it for oil spill cleanups, art and design projects, and composting. The partnership means the salon will charge a £1 green fee per groom. Owners Tracy Haynes and Samantha Brooks said, "We are thrilled to join forces with the Green Salon Collective. At Hairy Poppins, we have always valued our clients' satisfaction, and now we can extend that satisfaction to the planet as well. By recycling hair in 10 different ways, we are bringing sustainability right into our community. It's not just about grooming anymore, it's about making a difference." Hairy Poppins is a mother and daughter team with more than 30 years of experience. The salon offers dog grooming and daycare. Green Salon Collective is an organisation that encourages, that aims to transform the grooming industry's environmental impact. It does this by offering recycling programs that prevent waste from going to landfill. By choosing Hairy Poppins, customers become part of an eco-conscious movement, ensuring that even the smallest actions can make a significant difference. For more information, visit their website, hairypoppinshampshire.co.uk.
Oh dear. Right, my piece is headed "£1 bus ticket deal extended." Blue Star has extended a popular deal offering passengers £1 bus tickets on any of its routes for at least a year. The Hampshire Bus Company, which operates in and around Southampton, has secured funding from both local and national government to continue the scheme. It permits passengers to enjoy evening bus travel on a one-way journey on any route, on any zone, for £1 after 6 p.m. A Blue Star spokesperson said, "Buses have the potential to take many cars off our roads and means that you can leave yours at home. You will only be charged £1 each way after 6 p.m. This offer isn't only restricted to Southampton. You can travel on any route in any zone." Jackie, please.
Charities and businesses to come together. A Hampshire charity has launched a programme to unite businesses and local charities. Community First's Building Connections offers businesses a straightforward way to support charities through volunteering, skill sharing, donations and training. The programme aims to create mutually beneficial partnerships, allowing businesses to demonstrate social responsibility while gaining real benefits. Involving employees in charitable work can enhance workplace culture, improve staff retention, and attract new talent. It also provides a chance for businesses to raise their profile and show customers their commitment to making a difference. The initiative provides charities with valuable support from skilled volunteers who can offer expertise in areas such as strategic planning, team management, and governance. Businesses can also provide essential resources, time and donations to help charities grow and enhance their community impact. Tim Houghton, Chief Executive of Community First, said, "Collaboration between businesses and charities can create real positive change. Building connections is about more than just giving back. It's about building lasting partnerships that benefit the community. The first meeting is scheduled for June. Organisations are encouraged to sign up now."
Thank you. Jackie Richard, please.
Nursery's tasty cooking event for families. A nursery has launched a new initiative to bring families together through cooking. First Friends Day Nursery in Alton hosted its first First Flavours baking workshop, a spin-off of the nursery's Thoughtful Food programme. The event, which focused on creating a gingered loaf cake, was attended by 9 families, totalling 26 participants and 5 staff members. While the cakes baked, families enjoyed refreshments, play and socialising. Jane Noble, the nursery manager, said, "Our goal with First Flavours is to show what makes our nurseries special, how we work closely with parents, how much children enjoy our activities and the wonderful sense of community that we have." The event was deemed a success, with the pre-made ginger loaf cake disappearing before the session ended. Due to the positive feedback, First Friends Nursery plans to continue First Flavours on a quarterly basis. Kim, a parent who attended the workshop, said, "We had a fab time making ginger loaf cake with Nikki and the First Friends team. It was lovely to spend quality time as a family and meet other families. The ginger cake was delicious. We'll be back again to do it next time." The next session later this year will take place in June. We'll focus on movement and mindfulness. Tasty as the ginger cake.
Thank you, Richard. Jill, please.
Mountain of rubbish goes uncollected. A horrendous and unsightly mountain of rubbish has piled up outside a Winchester restaurant after the city's refuse collection company failed to clear it. A resident reported that the pile on Trafalgar Street by Coat is a frequent sight, blaming the French Brasserie for what he sees as their lack of eagerness to solve the issue. However, manager Barbara Teluskovic claimed that Biffa, which is contracted to pick up the restaurant's rubbish 6 days per week, did not turn up on Thursday, April the 3rd, after collection workers called in to say they had been delayed. Barbara said, "We are waiting for collection from Biffa, who are meant to collect every single day. The pavement is so narrow that we can't keep bigger pit bins outside. The restaurant gets a penalty because we have a couple of bins we keep inside, but we don't have any more space. This, explained Barbara, puts the restaurant in a quandary. We don't have enough space inside, and we aren't allowed to keep the bins outside. In spite of today's mishap, the manager said that Biffa is usually punctual with its collections, which are scheduled between 6 a.m. and 7 a.m. from Monday until Saturday. Normally they're quite good, said Barbara. It's just today. A Biffa spokesperson said, we take great pride in our work with customers in and around Winchester, so we're really sorry we missed yesterday's recycling collection at Cote. However, I can confirm our crew visited the site today and the bags have now been cleared.
Thank you, Jill. Well, I'm sorry to say that's all we have for you this week, but before we go, another reminder that if you have any problems with your recording, the contact number is on the key fob attached to the memory stick. Would you please put the memory stick and the address label in the wallet when you finish with it and return it to us as soon as possible. Well, thanks to all the support teams for the preparation and dispatch of this edition, and of course many thanks to our readers, Jackie.
Goodbye.
Richard.
Bye.
Jill.
Goodbye.
And from me, Peter. Until next time, goodbye.